You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, October 2nd, 2024. It is now, 34 days till Election Day, and another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or on the Civic Media app, on demand by podcast or on social media. Thanks for starting your day right here. I got a question for you. Did you have a sense of deja vu around the fifth inning of that Brewers game yesterday, game one of the playoffs? And it appears the Brewers have picked up right where they left off in last year's postseason. It was not pretty. It got off to a nice enough start, but the wheels came off the bus with several defensive miscues in the fifth inning. And in the end, the New York Mets went on to take game one. And so it's a must-win situation this evening for the Brewers at American Family Field if the Central Division winners want to try to get out of the wild card round this year, unlike last year. We'll talk more about that in just a little bit. There was a vice presidential debate last night between Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. Vance seemed to have a case of amnesia, repeatedly bringing up that Vice President Kamala Harris has been vice president for the past 3 years, and so all the things she says she wants to do, she should have gotten them done while she was vice president. Donald Trump was president for the 4 years before that, and so there's things that he says he's going to do that he had 4 years to do while he was president. Otherwise, Vance talked about going back to the way things were under Trump. And there's a reason why at every Harris-Walz rally, you have the loudest cheers include the phrase, "We're not going back," because there are thankfully still plenty of Americans who haven't memory hold that period before and then during COVID. So we'll talk a bit more about the debate this hour. We'll talk about it in our second hour as well. We'll get our reporter Elizabeth Montemurrow in here to have reaction from one of the debate watch parties, including reaction from a former student of Tim Walz. We'll have Todd Alba's take on the debate. We'll also talk to Dan Cannonan, the battleground director for the Harris-Walz campaign, about the path to victory here in Wisconsin, Dan Cannonan's home state. We'll talk to education author Elizabeth Berkshire in this week's Homeroom segment about how voters in battleground states like Wisconsin are pushing back against the efforts to weaken or privatize our public schools. And, we have our climate check report this hour as well with Melissa Baldoff, all about the hurricane-fueled disaster in the southeast and how a changing climate made things so much worse, despite Donald Trump's wild claims otherwise. So all of that, Brittany Merlot's forecast, and more ahead. At any point during the show, if you'd like to ask us a question, leave a comment, you can call us, you can text us. Same number, either way, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or put a comment on Facebook or YouTube, one of the pages where we're at, just like on one of our Facebook pages, where one of our frequent Trump supporters, Brian, before the show even started, gave the comment for everybody to see there. Vance won this debate, and Trump is going to be our next president. So you have one comment in the comment section there worth responding to, if you care to. Greg Bach is standing by in Waukesha, and he is in, he's the coolest. He's in the coolest place in the state right now. It's 39 down there in Waukesha, 41 in Madison, whereas up here it's 48 in Chippewa Falls, 51 in Hayward, 46 in Park Falls, Wausau's at 46, Green Bay 43, La Crosse 49, 42 in Rapids, 44 in Oshkosh. But yeah, 39 down by you. How'd you get to be so cool?
What can I say, man? I just live the cool life. I listen to the cool jazz. I drink the cool drinks. I hang out with the cool peeps.
Well, then you cool is what you got.
That's all I got. Cool is what, I'm so tired, and, Pat. I'm so tired.
I know. I you know how I know we're both tired? We both embraced our spirit animal, Roy Kent. He's on my coffee mug, and you're wearing your Roy Kent whistle t-shirt right now.
That's right.
How long has Ted Lasso been off the air? How much longer are we going to ride this one? Because I can ride it for a while here until you find another character like Roy Kent. You know,
Season 4 is probably coming in the next few years. So,
you think so?
It is. It's confirmed. They're doing the Season 4.
No.
Yep.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Neither do I, honestly. I really feel like it's like, guys, we could leave this be and let it be.
Yeah.
What is it? Are we going tropical with this season? Are we going to the moon? Is it going to be like, I don't know. I have no idea. I kind of feel like this show was perfect in three seasons, but mm-hmm. I'm still going to watch it when it's on.
Well, of course. Yeah. Of course. Because, you know, sometimes things, you know, are better or at least good the second time around, you know. Godfather 2, perfectly good, you know.
Wonderful sequel.
Yep. Whereas, not always with the comedies, Anchorman 2, not very good.
I didn't like the first one, so.
Oh, come on. Yeah. I take that personally, since so much of it is based on my life. A lot of folks don't know that. Speaking as the Ron Burgundy of Eau Claire in the late 1990s.
That's not a flex.
I beg to differ. I don't know if you know this. I was kind of a big deal. So I have okay. many leather-bound books. Now the debate, I know you're tired because you work.
Yeah.
And you work hard.
Yeah.
That means you didn't get to see the debate. And so I'm, in a way, envious of your work. Because you got laughs out of what you were doing at work.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was a fantastic show.
Me not so much. But look, it's a rite of passage that folks have to go through. If you're going to be vice president, we've got to be able to kick the tires, at least for a night, see what you've got to say, see what you're made of. How do you handle tough questions about the issues? And, do you make a good impression on people? And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I was looking at one of the polls about favorability ratings. And both of these guys brought out their Midwestern nice. You know, I never heard the word ope, but there were plenty of other times where like, well, I actually agree with Tim, or I actually agree with JD about this. And then they'd go on to say to where they disagree. But there was a lot of that kind of, you know, not wanting to look like the bad guy because, you know, we're from the Midwest. So when they did some polling afterwards, for both men, their favorability numbers went up, double digits went up. But that just meant that Tim Walz had like a near 60% favorability rating. JD Vance's numbers improved by 11 points, and that still brought him to like 41%. He's still underwater for favorability. So he didn't turn into, you know, Captain Angry Robot, but a lot of people sensed correctly, I think, that there were a few times where he was telling whoppers, shall we say, you know, when you're saying American energy production is down and people know that it's up. And when he said Donald Trump saved Obamacare there, that you were at a comedy festival. That was as close as I came to a comedy festival was when JD Vance said Donald Trump saved Obamacare. You could almost hear a national laugh track there at that point.
I also take issue with everyone giving all right, I'm just going to be honest here. J.D. Vance is a snake. He is a snake as well as a snake oil salesman. And anyone thinks that he is the right guy and the champion, you're drinking the Kool-Aid. Because when we attach things like, oh, he's from the Midwest. Yeah, he was born here, but he doesn't represent who we are. Because he turns his back on it to become whomever he wants to be, to impress whomever will listen to him and take him seriously. I get very angry about this because Tim Walz is everything that I feel like represents a good Midwestern man. JD Vance is none of those things. He's snake.
Well, here's where people really, if they were going to have a moment to think that, it came at the end. And I'm sure a lot of folks tuned out, but then they missed conceivably one of the more important parts where at the end and talking about January 6th and talking about the peaceful transfer of power, Tim Walz just straight up asked J.D. Vance, even though, you know, they weren't supposed to ask questions of each other, you know, will you acknowledge who won the 2020 election? And J.D. Vance kind of danced around it. And in this first clip that we've got from the debate, Tim Walz calls him out on it.
Does have the floor for 1 minute to respond to you.
Yeah, well, I don't run Facebook. What I do know is I see a candidate out there who refused, and now again, and this, I'm pretty shocked by this, he lost the election. This is not a debate. It's not it's not anything anywhere other than in Donald Trump's world. Because look, when Mike Pence made that decision to certify that election, that's why Mike Pence isn't on this stage. What I'm concerned about is, where is the firewall with Donald Trump? Where is the firewall if he knows he could do anything, including taking an election, and his vice president's not going to stand to it? That's what we're asking you, America. Will you stand up? Will you keep your oath of office, even if the president doesn't? And I think Kamala Harris would agree. She wouldn't have picked me if she didn't think I would do that, because, of course, that's what we would do. So, America, I think you've got a really clear choice on this election of who's going to honor that democracy and who's going to honor Donald Trump.
Governor.
That was a moment when he said, couldn't help but notice, you know, Mike Pence, not on that stage. Why might that be? Why might that be? And that you need somebody that can at least be truthful about 2020. And again, I will say, we all have plenty of Republican friends that maybe we don't agree on a lot, but our Republican friends will be like, well, yeah, Trump lost. I mean, I voted for Trump, they'll say, but he lost. There are still some folks that buy into the conspiracies and things like that, but there are enough other folks that look at J.D. Vance and go, really? You're going to continue this thing? We're going to continue to have this make-believe fight about 2020?
I don't know anybody who says, oh, he won. What I do know are people who say, yeah, but we don't know about that election. I'm like,
yeah, you're worse. I hear there were problems.
They're worse than the people that say that Donald Trump is still the president, because they're just mildly sowing the seeds of doubt. And that, to me, is just, I'm fired up right now, Patrick. I am very fired up.
Uh-oh, he used Patrick. That's it. I ignited something over here. Well, then you'll want to stick around, because we've got more clips coming up from the vice presidential debate between Tim Walz and J.D. Vance as we move into these final 34 days. And again, Harris Walz Battleground Director Dan Cannon joins us in our next hour to talk more about where the campaigns go from here and into Wisconsin. Kamala Harris coming back to Wisconsin tomorrow for an appearance in the Fox Valley. Donald Trump in Dane County in Milwaukee yesterday. All of this to say, your vote counts. Make a plan to vote. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Philip Oakey of the Human League is 69 years old today. We'll have more birthdays and historical notes in today's history lesson coming up in about 30 minutes. As mentioned, it was a five-run outburst in the fifth inning that helped the New York Mets continue a very thrilling late-season run into the postseason as they beat up on the Milwaukee Brewers 8-4 in the first game of the National League Wild Card Series. The Mets didn't even earn a playoff berth until they rallied from a three-run deficit to win the opening game of a makeup doubleheader in Atlanta on Monday. Now they're a win away from heading to Philadelphia for the division series. Milwaukee has lost 10 of its last 11 playoff games. It's a stretch that began, of course, with that heartbreaking Game 7 home defeat against the Dodgers in the 2018 National League Championship Series. The Brewers had been 5-0. Against the Mets this season before losing to them 5-0 in the regular season finale on Sunday. Milwaukee had taken a 4-3 lead into the fifth inning when manager Pat Murphy pulled Freddie Peralta, who had thrown 68 pitches and retired the last nine batters he faced. And then there was a miscue in left field by Jackson Churio. There was then Jose Iglesias hitting a hard grounder. The first baseman, Rhys Hoskins, tried to throw it to pitcher Yoel Piamps, but Iglesias beat him to the bag for an infield single. Aaron Ashby came in, didn't retire any of the five batters that he faced. He threw a wild pitch. He loaded up the bases with an intentional walk, and that led to former Brewer Jesse Winker delivering a two-run single to right field. So again, 5-0 Mets, and the Brewers are in a must-win situation for the game today. Let me get the particulars on that for you, because these things change occasionally. Like yesterday, they said it was going to be on ESPN2, then it was on ESPN1 for the TV. But you can listen to it right here on the radio on this Wednesday afternoon, or this Wednesday evening. 6 p.m. is the broadcast start at WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, WCQM in Park Falls, and WRJN in Racine and Kenosha for the Brewers that need to break the streak. Again, going back 6 years now, this is getting a mite old. All right, back to the vice presidential debate. And again, the theme that I pulled out of here was that Tim Walz was a little rocky in the beginning. Can't say that I blame him. You're on a national stage for the first time like this in a debate sense. But he was a little shaky at times and then found his footing eventually. J.D. Vance was fairly smooth from the get-go. And I like that commentators after these debates are noting that your performance can be smooth, but if you're still lying, you're still lying. And then it's a matter of whether the audience picks up on that, or if they're only watching for the intangibles, like who looks confident and who looks nervous. Because like I said, Vance told a fair share of whoppers about Obamacare, about energy production, about a national abortion ban, about the peaceful transfer of power. Let's listen to a couple of clips here. This one about abortion rights was one that really hit home for a lot of people who were watching, including our friends at Motherhood for Good, that J.D. Vance was talking about not abortion bans, of course, and denying that he ever was for them, but was talking about, you know, minimum standards, like 15 weeks or something like that, you know, a ban.
Now, of course, Donald Trump has been very clear that on the abortion policy specifically, that we have a big country and it's diverse. And California has a different viewpoint on this than Georgia. Georgia has a different viewpoint from Arizona. And the proper way to handle this, as messy as democracy sometimes is to let voters make these decisions, let the individual states make their abortion policy. And I think that's what makes the most sense in a very big, a very diverse, and let's be honest, sometimes a very, very messy and divided country.
Governor, and Tim Walz had the right response to this. Governor Walz's response was simply, no, there are some things that should not be up for vote, like basic human rights and the right for women to control their own bodies. And so J.D. Vance saying, well, we can let elections decide and have this checkerboard arrangement of whether women have rights or restrictions. A lot of people still continue to find that abhorrent. Before we get to Melissa Baldoff and our climate check, we did see some discussion on climate. And I wanted to play this clip because, again, J.D. Vance has an allergy. It's an allergy to experts, to people who have informed views on things. Listen to J.D. Vance trying to sound moderate on climate, going, well, let's accept that it's true. And then, of course, he criticizes the quote-unquote weird science that's behind a very definitely changing climate.
Now, Nora, you asked about climate change. I think this is a very important issue. Look, a lot of people are justifiably worried about all these crazy weather patterns. I think it's important for us, first of all, to say Donald Trump and I support clean air, clean water. We want the environment to be cleaner and safer. But one of the things that I've noticed some of our Democratic friends talking a lot about is a concern about carbon emissions, this idea that carbon emissions drives all of the climate change. Well, let's just say that's true, just for the sake of argument, so we're not arguing about weird science. Let's just say that's true. Well, if you believe that, what would you want to do? The answer is that you'd want to reshore as much American manufacturing as possible, and you'd want to produce as much energy as possible in the United States. States of America, because we're the cleanest economy in the entire world. What have
Greg, why would we listen to the weird science? And well, let's just accept that the weird science is true.
Yeah.
All you're doing then is when you say, well, we want to bring more manufacturing home, All he did was he teed up Tim Walz to say, yeah, the Inflation Reduction Act is doing that. We're creating an entirely new generation of manufacturing jobs. The bipartisan infrastructure law is doing that as well. But please don't listen to the weird science.
You know, the science that, like, most scientists agree upon, you know.
Yes.
That.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Here's our last one where J.D. Vance wants you to stop listening to the experts. In this case, he starts talking about fentanyl coming into the country.
Many of the drugs, the pharmaceuticals that we put in the bodies of our children are manufactured by nations that hate us. This has to stop. And we're not going to stop it by listening to experts. We're going to stop it by listening to common sense wisdom, which is what Donald Trump governed on.
Senator, your time is up. Governor Walz, can you address that? I mean, voters say they trust Donald Trump on the economy more. Why?
Well, if you're listening tonight and you want billionaires to get tax cuts, you heard what the numbers were. Look, I'm a union guy on this. I'm not a guy who wanted to ship things overseas, but I understand that, look, we produce soybeans and corn. We need to have fair trading partners. That's something that we believe in.
It is something that we believe in. And you know how we found out we believed in these things? By listening to the experts and not necessarily the, quote, common sense wisdom of Donald Trump. All right, Melissa's got our climate check coming up next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's electric. All right, we're back on Up North News Radio for this Wednesday morning. Time for our weekly climate check, and Melissa Baldoff is with us, and we'll be talking a bit about Hurricane Helene and all that it did to the southeastern U.S. and the connections that are there, whether some people want to see them or not. Melissa, hello. How are you?
I'm doing all right, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right as well. Obviously, our thoughts and our hearts are still with the folks who have been having to deal with all that Helene had brought to that part of the country. And look, mm-hmm. as we're getting the analysis now of the storm, and it was, to borrow that cliche, it was a perfect storm in that the storm itself happened to go over the same path as the advanced bands of rain, which doesn't always happen. You then throw in, you know, the mountain topography and, you know, where the jet stream was. I mean, it was everything was set up that it was not going to be good anyway. But it is also indisputable that there were some factors related to a changing climate that made an already bad setup even worse for those folks in the Southeast.
That's absolutely true. And it really is just incredibly devastating destruction there. You know, the loss of life, we know there are more than 100 people have lost their lives. There are still many more people unaccounted for and missing. There will be hundreds of millions of dollars in damages. It's just absolutely devastating. Growing up in Florida and living most of my life there, I'm no stranger to the devastation of hurricanes. And also having spent a lot of my childhood in Western North Carolina, my grandparents summered there in that part of the state. I have family and friends who were impacted by the storm who thankfully are all okay and didn't lose property, had very minimal damage, but seeing what's happening in the part of the country is really horrific. And knowing that if we don't do anything about climate change and we don't take steps to really do our part in this country to mitigate the negative effects of climate change, that these storms can get worse. They have been getting worse over the years, and we're seeing them move now. This destruction that was limited to, you know, really to coastal areas, we're seeing it come further inland in places that don't have as much capacity to deal with it and to respond. And in places like in the mountains of North Carolina, it's much harder to get in and respond and get in to provide rescue operations when there are roads that are washed out and there's only one way to get in to right. some of these communities. It's not like when you're going into an area in Florida where there's a whole lot of ways to get in to a different community. when there are some of these areas in, you know, mountain communities and a road gets washed out, that's it. That's your only way in. And if that road is washed out, there are people who are stranded there that have maybe not a lot of food and water on hand because they didn't know they needed to plan to have that much. And they maybe don't have already super strong broadband. And, you know, they're experiencing maybe phone outages. So they are very cut off. And it is devastating to think that they aren't going to be able to get help right away. And that in the future, it could get even worse if we don't do anything about it.
Right. I mean, you look at a report done by the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory that estimates a changing climate caused more than 50% more rainfall during Helene in some parts of Georgia and the Carolinas that they otherwise would receive. And the reason for that is a climate that's warming up means the oceans warm up. And even here in the Midwest, we know, we've heard it enough times, when a tropical storm or a hurricane, when the water gets warmer, it is able to get stronger. For every 1 degree Fahrenheit of warming, according to a Climate Central meteorologist, the atmosphere can hold up to 4% more moisture. If you're holding more moisture, and if that storm can come farther inland, then, you know, don't think of it as a hurricane. Think of it as what we talk about up here in Wisconsin, that our storms are going to be more intense. Our flash floods, there's going to be more flood in our flash floods, essentially. And yet, Melissa, despite all of this, once again, on Sunday, as this was ripping into that part of the country, there's Donald Trump again referring to the climate change as a scam. And there is perhaps no greater scam in politics than him getting away with this kind of rhetoric.
It's right. It is just absolutely appalling to be out there in any circumstance denying the very clear science around the fact that man-made climate change is real and that we are contributing to the catastrophes like this that are devastating communities all around the country, all around the world. And to say that as a hurricane is devastating part of our country, as people are losing their lives, as people are losing their homes and their businesses, it's unconscionable when we know for a fact, when we have the head of FEMA going on the same day, going on CBS News and saying that the severe devastation caused by this hurricane is absolutely linked to the climate emergency. And then you have Donald Trump saying, oh no, it's a scam. It's one of the greatest scams of all time. It's absolutely appalling. And I don't understand how anyone can take him seriously.
No, and here's the thing you should take seriously. And we've talked about Project 2025 in this segment before, but it does call for slashing funding for hurricane monitoring, slashing funding for relief agencies, and monetizing the weather forecasts by federal agencies. There could not be worse timing on a proposal like that, you know, just as things are continuing to get worse with the climate. And yet, gosh, I use that a lot with this guy. And yet, he talks about, the response to a disaster like this. Of course, we've already covered how broadly he lied about, Governor Kemp in Georgia and others hearing from the Biden administration. But the record is quite clear that it was Trump's disaster response record that was so highly politicized, and what would happen again. So that, again, it doesn't matter if people voted for Trump or not. Once they're hit by a disaster, it's going to be, it's going to hit doubly hard when he does some of the things that he did last time around of hemming and hawing, unless, people professed, enough gratitude for him to release disaster assistance.
Exactly. You know, even Republican governors in states impacted by emergencies have praised President Biden's response to this and other emergencies. They know that he is a steady hand, that he has been able to direct resources to their states, direct relief to their states, and get them what they need to help their residents move forward and heal and get things back on track. And that is in really stark contrast to Donald Trump, who, when he was in office, delayed aid for Puerto Rico in the wake of a hurricane, who diverted money from FEMA in order to return undocumented people to Mexico. So he has a track record of not acting responsibly and in the best interests of residents who have been impacted by disasters when he was in office. And also, we know that in his Project 2025 plan, like you said, he would go so much further than that to take action to undermine the federal government's ability to respond to disasters. So it would really be, you know, a quite devastating and potentially deadly combination to have Donald Trump back in the White House, you know, not just if, but when we were faced with another natural disaster like this, knowing that he already makes bad decisions, bad politically motivated decisions when it comes to disaster response. And he would want to take away resources from the federal government in the way that the federal government does respond anyway.
Here's the thing that a lot of this started actually prior to Trump. And it bears noting, because I don't want people thinking that once, you know, Trump is off the stage, that the things that are hallmarks of Trumpism are dead. And specifically, of course, I'm talking about Chris Christie, and that when Hurricane Sandy slammed into New Jersey, look, Chris Christie, from a political standpoint, could go toe-to-toe with any Democrat. It doesn't matter if it was Barack Obama or anybody. But when the storm hits again, that's a whole different matter altogether. And the fact that Christie, as governor, heaped praise on President Obama for his response and expressed appreciation on behalf of the people of his state, and that people in his party attacked him mercilessly for this. I mean, there's a lot of things I could attack Chris Christie on, but being a compassionate human being isn't one of them. And so, Melissa, long after we're past Donald Trump, there's just a whole bunch of people that need to learn to remember some of the lessons they were taught in church next time a disaster happens, because it could happen to them.
Exactly. You know, it's like the, you know, like Mr. Rogers said, you know, you look for the helpers, right? You want to be looking for the helpers, and you don't want to be looking for the people who are yelling and screaming about, you know, who's to blame and, you know, why this person didn't do enough. You want to look for the people who are actually helping, who are actually doing the good work, who are actually doing the good job, and then who have the grace to say thank you to those people.
Exactly. And now, of course, it's worth noting that there are going to be people who are going to be hurting for a while here, and there will be Wisconsin Red Cross workers who are going to be going to help out with storm relief, which is a good thing. So now I figure, rather than talk about the climate, well, let's talk about a climate of kindness, that there are ways that all of us can be helpful as that chunk of the country works to recover.
Yeah, I think that's such a wonderful thing to talk about here, because, you know, so many of us watch and, you know, you think, you know, you just look at the devastation and you feel like, you know, there's nothing you can do. But, you know, it turns out there are things that we can do even from, you know, where we are here. So, you know, one of the first things that people can do is, if you are able to donate blood for folks that are able to donate blood. Not everyone can, but if you are able to, you can find a blood drive near you at the Red Cross donation locator. That's one of the most important things people can do. You can also donate to the Red Cross online. You can make a donation via text, texting Helene, H-E-L-E-N-E, to 90999 to make a donation. So that's one way people can get engaged. And also there are a number of other organizations helping out, like the United Way, the Hurricane Relief Fund, World Central Kitchen, a number of different organizations that are getting engaged to help out and provide resources to the people who have been impacted.
What Melissa said is absolutely right. Just text 90999. It used to be it automatically added like, you know, $10 or something to your phone bill. It's not like that now. You click on this link, but it couldn't be any quicker to say, is this what you want to give? How much do you want to give? And then, you know, your payment method of choice, and it's done. So do that or any of the other things that Melissa just outlined. And again, let's create more of a climate of kindness around these kinds of things. Melissa Baldoff, thank you so much as always. We always appreciate it, and we will talk again next week.
All right, sounds good.
I can still remember how that music used to make me smile.
Happy birthday to Don McLean, 79 years old today. Welcome to today's history lesson on Up North News Radio. Joined by Melissa Kay from WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. How you doing?
Good morning. I am tired like you, but you know what? We're here.
We're here, and we're here for 34 more days, and then... Woo! I'm going to take such a nap, I'm telling you. So what's new in the world of WFHR, WIRI?
You know, actually, we're excited because we are just about to launch our newsletter.
A newsletter?
It's going to happen.
Oh, are you like making cartoons for it, or is there a sport? Do I get to get stock tips in there? What are we going to find in this newsletter?
Well, you're going to find local news and local happenings. I'm working with Jade on our civic media team to do a graphic for our Kitchens Open segment, our mini segment that won a WBA last year. And we got a new host for that little mini show that happens every Monday. And she's going to design a little graphic for us to include in the newsletter. So you get kitchen tips, Pat.
I was aware of this little kitchen mini show.
Yeah.
What exactly do you do there? Is it like...
Well, for the last 2 years, I have been writing the scripts for it. And I did a radio drama for one of our episodes. And that's the one that won a WBA award.
A drama about what?
Kitchen tips.
Esmeralda searching for her missing Tupperware lid and sock.
Okay, you got to send me a link to that.
I will.
I got to learn more. So today, things were already busy as they were with this time of year and everything going on. And so I went to go do today's history lesson. And some days it's like pulling teeth trying to find enough interesting things. I promise you, this is the record, the most amount of birthdays and anything that's ever been under one date. There's apparently something about October 2nd.
Surprised you let me talk for 2 minutes. Go ahead.
I wanted to make sure I didn't forget you, because now we're gonna speed round this thing if you're okay with that.
You got this.
Well, let's get the bad news out of the way first here. Tom Petty passed away this day 7 years ago at the age of 66. And it was on this day in 1995 that O.J. Simpson was acquitted in the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. Again, almost 29 years ago now.
Wow.
Yeah, let's get to the music. The number one song this day in 1982 was by a new up-and-comer named John Cougar.
Badette.
Little ditty about two American kids growing up in the heartland.
Suck it on a chili dog. I don't get it.
By Mr. Cougar, who would later revert to John Mellencamp. On this day in 1990, East Germany was abolished and reunited with the West as the Federal Republic of Germany. This is the anniversary of the birth in 1939 of Lolly Vegas, who was one of the founders of Redbone. Bow, bow, bow. Come on, you can do it. Bow, bow. Lolly Vegas, who was born Candido Vasquez in Coalinga, California, one of the biggest acts of Native American heritage with this 1974 hit.
Not move your head to this song.
Yep. Mike Rutherford of Genesis, Mike and the Mechanics and More, is 74 today. Blues musician Keb Moe is 73. The late Stevie Ray Vaughan was born this day 70 years ago. Stevie Ray Vaughan would have been 70 today. Mm-hmm. We mentioned Philip Oakey of the Human League is 69. Sting is 73 today. His birth name, Gordon Sumner. It was also on this day on his 30th birthday, 1981, the Police released their fourth album, Ghost in the Machine, with this hit.
It's Gordon Sumner, Pat.
Did I say Summer? I'm sorry. Sumner.
Actually, Pat.
That's why he goes by Sting.
There you go. Jack Wagner, the soap opera star from I Think All My Children, who later had a little soft rock hit with All I Need. He's 65 today. Robbie Neville is 66. Here's his hit from 1986. Tommy Lee of Motley Crue is 62 today. Chris Collingwood from Fountains of Wayne, 57 today. Gwen Stefani is 55 years old today. Tiffany, the singer. Remember Tiffany? Had a big hit with I Think We're Alone Now, the Tommy James hit back when she was 17. Mm-hmm. Tiffany is 53 years old today.
Cool. This whole section feels real good, Pat.
Okay. Here, this will help. Kevin Richardson of the Backstreet Boys is 53 today. Alan O'Day was born this day in 1940. He had the 70s hit Undercover Angel. India Arie is 49.
Oh, I love her.
And on this day in 1971, Rod Stewart, still with his group Faces, he had the number one hit this day in 1971 with this classic. On the National Day calendar, this is National Custodian Day. Woo-hoo! This is National Kale Day. This is National Name Your Car Day. Did you name your car, either one of you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Cleopatra.
Cleopatra, nice. This is Walker Bike to School Day, and this is National Farm Animal Day. So give the cow a little extra hug. Oh, missed a song here. Remember a couple months back, we noted it was Rick Derringer's 77th birthday. And that he was 17 when he had a number one hit with the McCoys. It hit number one this day in 1965. Okay, at this point, it could be anything in the 60s, but yep.
It's the opening to Grease.
Right? Melissa Kay from WFHR, WIRI, Wisconsin Rapids, thank you so much.
Always good to see you guys.
Always good to visit with you. In our second hour, Battleground Director for the Harris Walls Campaign, Dan Cannonan, education author Jennifer Berkshire, and Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro, who was at a debate watch party last night. This is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.